You're tuned to The Weekend, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for The Weekend. And joining us today are Fabiola Eckelberry, Kathy Giovas, and Georgina Sanchez. And they're here to talk about the second annual Trauma and Resilience Conference in the Borderland Conference. This is going to take place next Friday and is brought by the Professional Counselors of El Paso. Ladies, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.
Let's start first with you, Fabiola. Tell us a little bit about the Professional Counselors of El Paso. What is that?
Professional Counselors of El Paso is a local network of counselors, not only for licensed professional counselors, but also we have opened it for anybody basically for mental health or anybody who supports mental health. So we have licensed clinical social workers, licensed professional counselors, psychologists, anybody who is willing to support mental health in our community, and it's for professional growth and networking and getting to know the area resources. And it's also a great opportunity for our UTEP students. We have even UTEP students join our committee, and they're helping out, and it's a good way for them also to get to know the resources and other mentors in the community to help them in their professional development.
As far as the conference, as I mentioned, it's the second annual conference. Tell us how this came about, starting it.
Yes, this came about as a president of Professional Counselors of El Paso. I've always felt, as a therapist here in the area and working with an area nonprofit agency, I always feel that there's a need for counseling in trauma. There's not enough counselors that are trained in trauma. That's how I felt. And so I felt there's a big need for educating counselors in the area on trauma. So I've always had this vision of doing lots of training, and it's coming along, and I'm so excited that all this has taken off. And so the way this came about was I met Temperance Johnson, Dr. Temperance Johnson. She used to work for the university, and she's a psychologist in the community. She is the president of El Paso Psychological Association. Also, I met Dee Blinka, who is a licensed clinical social worker from the area of Alpine. And they also had the same idea as I did. So we happened to meet at a different time and place, and we started collaborating on this idea last year, and it came about our first conference, and we were so excited that it was a great success. We had wonderful speakers. We had lots of people really give us lots of compliments on what a wonderful conference. They were very impressed with the area, with the people of El Paso. Those that came from out of town were very impressed at the quality of the conference, the speakers, the topics, and how warm the people of El Paso, how welcoming. They said that they've been to bigger conferences, but nothing like El Paso. We made them feel very at home. They felt very welcome, and they really loved it. So they want to come back to the El Paso. So we're putting ourselves out there to the United States.
Fabiola, I'm sorry, I didn't announce your credentials at the beginning of the program. So if you wouldn't mind sharing with us, you were telling me what you do.
Yes, I'm a licensed professional counselor and a supervisor as well. So I supervise other upcoming therapists.
And you're also an adjunct professor here at UTEP.
Yes, I'm an adjunct professor at the educational psychology, giving a master level course.
And Kathy, tell us a little bit about your background.
So I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I work part-time in private practice, aspiring life counseling, and I'm also a visiting lecturer here at UTEP. I have a strong background in working with trauma. That's why this conference and us moving forward and continuing on is so near and dear to my heart, because I really see the need. Our community really, really needs therapists, counselors, social workers, students to take an interest in this, because this is what our community really needs.
One of the things that has come up week after week, day after day, is, and everyone's heard about it, is tragic news, but the shootings in our schools.
Yes.
And so if you wouldn't mind sharing with us a little bit about, from your end as a counselor and as a social worker, therapist, what are some of the things that perhaps need to be told to these children?
Well, I think, first of all, as a therapist that works with children as young as three, I like to work very closely with parents, because I know if I can help the parents, they give good parenting skills, then you have healthier children, mental health, and very be able to be more resilient and have those protective factors. So not only it's about treating trauma after the fact, but it's also about prevention and educating the community on how, and not just stressing like academics, like math and reading. All those are important, but I think also mental health is just as important, because if you don't have mental health, you can't learn. And if you don't have a very solid self-esteem and have those protective factors and that resilience. When things happen, so simple as it may be a bullying, they won't be able to handle it, and they are not as resilient to be able to handle events that happen. Those are things that, you know, that can't be prevented.
We live in the community here in the Southwest, and it's a very diverse community, as you all are very well aware. And sometimes, not just in our culture, but just about everywhere, mental health has kind of a negative stigma, and people don't want to talk about it. So if you wouldn't mind sharing your thoughts on that, Kathy?
Absolutely. I oftentimes encounter that, especially in private practice, or when I worked in the past at the hospital, I would say, you know, have you guys as a family considered counseling? And the first thing out of their mouth was like, no, we're not crazy. And you know what? I'm not into medication. I don't want to do that. So, yes, even though we're in 2018, we do come from a culture, a background that it is highly, a lot of people are anti-therapy because they think like, no, it's a lot of money and it's not doable and it's a waste of time, things like that. I don't think we've ever been able to show the importance of what it can prevent, how you can process through traumas, and the importance of it, because if you're able to process through past traumas, it won't affect you later on.
As far as the counseling itself, it also has become a little bit more acceptable, because even insurance companies will pay for therapies, right?
Yes. And also, there's also a resource in the community that do sliding scale fee, or in agencies that have grants that can provide that at free. So if they want it, it's out there in El Paso. There is resources in the community for counseling. But yeah, it's like Kathy's saying, it's like moving away from the stigma. And I think we're working on it. We still have to get away from the stigma, especially in our community, because we have a lot of Hispanics, and they think that if I go to the therapist, they'll say, well, I'm not crazy. You know, voy al psicólogo. You know, so trying to move away from that. But we all need it. We all have trauma of some way or another. Everything is moving towards what's called the trauma-informed care. And that meaning is that we assume that everybody that comes in has trauma, whether it be something small in our life or something major, big event. But we all have it. So we come with the belief of not what is wrong with you, but what happened to you that might have affected like your self-esteem, your confidence, or not being able to cope with even just stressors like a school, like all the pressures of everything of school life and exams and projects and reading and performance. And so I think even if you haven't had something traumatic in your event, it might be some way affecting as to why you might be anxious or why you might be depressed. So it's not necessarily a full PTSD, but there might be something there. And we know, as we're getting to know more, that a lot of the disorders have their roots somewhere in some kind of trauma.
You mentioned earlier about bullying, and this is something, there have always been bullies in school. You hear about that. But now cyberbullying has become very, very big as a problem.
Yeah.
And some students won't tell their parents, and you can tell that something is wrong. Mm-hmm. And the longer they ignore it, I guess it gets even worse.
Yeah.
Right.
Did you want to share something, Kathy?
And I think that's a big problem. I think oftentimes with the increase in teen suicides, adolescents that are committing suicide, and I will say this, is it's not publicized in the newspapers, in the news, but being that I have a background working in the medical setting, I would oftentimes see it, that the teenagers would come in, and they really, really feel that they have no other recourse, that, you know, now that it's online, I can't press delete because there is no such thing as delete. I can't get out of this, and how am I going to tell my parents? Things like that. And I think one of the messages we want to send out is, you know what, there are options. There's things that you can do. And if this happened and it went viral, okay, these are some of the things that we can do. I know El Paso Sheriff's Department, the police department, everybody's trying to work together alongside therapists and counselors to put a stop to this, that this is reportable and there's things that can be done. But I think oftentimes students feel like, you know what, there is no other recourse. How am I going to tell my parents? Maybe let's say I sent a nude photo and, you know, what is everybody going to say? How am I going to get out of this? And I'm being bullied, I'm being threatened, things like that.
What about domestic violence? It happens a lot, and sometimes, as Kathy mentioned, they don't want to talk about it the family, perhaps the wife is scared, or the husband, and the children are afraid to say something.
Yeah. We're also starting to learn more about what's called narcissistic abuse, you know, and they get so wrapped up. These individuals are very charming, and it's hard for them. They create that codependence, them on the wife and the wife on the husband, and so it's a cycle of abuse. Not necessarily always even physical, it could be emotional abuse. So they have a hard time getting out of that relationship. And even if they do, it could be scary, because even we've seen that, you know, there can be, you know, hunted down and killed. Mm-hmm. And so it could be scary, or sometimes, especially in our border, it's very common that a lot of the women coming from Mexico, they don't have any education, they haven't worked for many years, they have no financial resources, they are isolated from their families, they're taken away, they don't have access to the bank, so they have a hard time getting away from an abusive relationship. So there's many ways of being abused, not just physically.
And Kathy, this is something that I'm sure the children are very much affected by.
Oh, very much so. Definitely. Yeah, very much so, because they witness it. And remember, you may not be hit, you may not be yelled at, but you're witnessing your parents arguing, you're witnessing, oftentimes it's a female, you know, your mother being threatened, things like that. So it definitely affects the children.
And people also don't understand that, even when I ask, because I'm also in private practice, and I ask the mother if the child has witnessed, and they say, yeah, he was 1 year old, he doesn't remember. And I said, no, he might not remember, because his memories are not in words. Those are intrinsic memories, but the body does. So the child might have been anxious or reacting or have behavioral issues and not be aware that it comes from him witnessing the domestic violence, that, yeah, it was a scary situation. He doesn't know what was happening. He just knows it was scary. So the body remembers. So this necessarily doesn't have to remember it with words or images, but the child is reacting to something.
Tell us a little bit about, we've heard this before, and it's called, I'm not even sure if this is the correct term, but circle of violence, or because the child witnesses something, then they carry on, they become abusive, or vice versa, and it just goes in big circles.
Correct. The cycle of violence, circle of violence. It does kind of go round and round. One of the big things is that what you see oftentimes is they'll come in for therapy and they'll say, well, you know what, I did witness my mother getting beat, and I don't beat my wife as much as, you know, my mother was beat. Or, yeah, you know what, I do hit my children, but it's not in comparison to the same way I was hit, things like that. So really what the circle of violence is, it becomes a choice. You know, do I want to go with the same path? Do I want to continue on? It starts off with, you know, what they call the honeymoon phase, where everything is going well, everything's going good. And then you have like a minor incident where I didn't really want to hit you. I didn't really want to do that. But, yeah, you know, you deserved it. But yeah, I'm sorry. Here's flowers. And then it just kind of continues on and really confuses everybody involved, whether it be children, whether it be in-laws, people trying to help you. And their biggest thing is like, well, just get out. How do you get out? You know, like Ms. Fabi mentioned earlier, is maybe mom doesn't have a job. You know what? Maybe she came from Mexico and she hasn't worked in years. And that's kind of part of their power and control, the root of all of this. So you have a parent saying like, okay, we're going to have to go live at the shelter. So that means that you may have to switch schools. That means that life as we know it now isn't going to be the same. And so it is a big thing.
And even though that they want to get out of that, or they know that they don't want to do that, but it's like they don't know what else to do instead. Or because of previous trauma, they're just going into that fight and flight mode, so they're not thinking anymore. So even though they feel the guilt and the remorse afterwards, or like Kathy said, it's the honeymoon phase and it builds up and then there's explosion and then coming back and saying, I'm sorry. But they don't know what else to do, or they can't help it, because it's just something that's like a knee-jerk reaction. Once they are not in their logical part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, they go into the fight and flight, the primitive part of the brain. So it's not something you can just control it. When you have trauma, something triggers it. It could be a smell. It could be an image. It can be a word. It can be a sensation. Something will trigger it, not consciously, but unconsciously, and so then they react, and then they go into that fight or flight mode. And for some people, it's even freeze mode. They just freeze. They can't do anything about it. And in many cases for the women, that's what they do. They go into freeze response. They can't fight the aggressor. They can't flee the aggressor, so they just breeze. They just surrender.
And, of course, you know, working here at the radio station, we have a lot of programs, music, and Dennis Wu, our producer, we had been talking about this before also, that sometimes a song can trigger a memory.
Exactly.
And it may be a happy song, but people saying, why are you acting the way you do? This is a happy song. But it triggers back.
Yeah, because it's somehow tied, maybe, like I said, not consciously, but unconsciously. You know, something was happening and maybe in the background when the fight was going on. So it can trigger that fight and flight mode. And so they go into that, and so they get reactive. They start getting hypervigilant, anxious, you know, shortness of breath. So, yeah, they can be triggered. Smell is probably one of the strongest of the traumas that can trigger something. So, like you said, it might be a happy song, it might be a good song, but if it's tied to something negative, it's gonna trigger that person.
We'll come back to a little bit about what you were talking in just a minute, but why don't you share with us a little bit about the theme of this year's conference and what's going to be covered?
Yes, we're so proud of it. This year, we really thought about it, and we wanted to really cover something that would our message of what we really want to accomplish with this in the long run, not just today and having a nice conference, but in the long run, what is it really we want to see in our community? And the theme of this year, besides it being the Trauma and Resilience in the Borderland Conference, is the Borderland Responds to Trauma para que nadie se quede atrás, so no one is left behind. So we want to make sure that everybody is included and that nobody in their healing process is left behind. What I'm really proud about this year is that we've opened not only to therapists or clinicians in our area and beyond, but we're also have included colleagues from Mexico. And last year we had even a presenter from Brazil, Andre Montero. So we're trying to make it national and international. So we're happy that this year we can say it's international because we are getting we have speakers coming from Mexico City, Guadalajara, from the city of Chihuahua, Ciudad Juarez. They're going to come and join us and bring some of their research and their presentations. Yeah. And also, this year we're including on Saturday, and everyone is welcome to come, is that we are opened it up to paraprofessionals, first responders, teachers, caseworkers, anybody, the general public is welcome to join us on Saturday, June 2nd, to come in and get knowledge of all these great speakers that we're having join us.
We'll come back to some of the sessions that you're having. But as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, Georgina Sanchez is also with us. And Georgina, if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about the conference to our Spanish-speaking friends, and because as Fabiola mentioned, there are a lot of people coming in from Mexico as well. So if you wouldn't mind sharing with us a little bit about the conference and what it's going to be all about.
Muy bien, les voy a hablar en español. Yo soy Georgina Sánchez, soy orgullosa egresada de la Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México, la UNAM, y ahora estoy muy orgullosa de estudiar en el programa de Mental Health Counseling aquí en UTEP. Ahora estoy también muy contenta de colaborar con esta organización, porque incluye a nuestros paisanos de México. Es una gran oportunidad para darnos cuenta que los problemas de salud mental que el Estados Unidos, y más precisamente El Paso, adolece, también lo adolece en la ciudad de Ciudad Juárez, que en realidad somos la misma comunidad. Y lo que nos puede engrandecer en cuestiones de salud mental, tanto en una como en otra comunidad, nos infiere a los dos. Así que me parece una gran oportunidad que esta conferencia haga la unión de las dos comunidades.
¿Y nos puedes dar, por favor, las fechas y en dónde va a ser la conferencia?
Sí, la fecha es este próximo junio 1, 2 y 3. Va a ser en el Hotel Marriott, muy cercano al aeropuerto, de 8:30 de la mañana.
¿De 8? Hasta las 4:30.
De 8 a 4:30 de la mañana. Los alimentos van a estar incluidos viernes y sábado, domingo no. El sábado va a estar abierto para todo el público, sería, es muy recomendable para los, para las personas que trabajan en la comunidad como, como policías,
bomberos,
ministerios públicos, por favor. Todas aquellas personas que en un momento dado se encuentren en situación de ayudar a alguien en crisis.
Well, thank you very much. We just heard from Georgina Sanchez, who was giving us a little bit about information for our Spanish-speaking friends about this Borderland conference. Now, back to you, Kathy and Fabiola. Georgina mentioned a little bit about, you know, the fact that, you know, working together, because when El Paso hurts, Juarez hurts, or vice versa. And those of us who live on the border know very well that a few years back there was so much violence in Juarez, and that affected families on both sides of the border.
This is how I got into this. I, as a therapist in the Child Guidance Center, we were getting a lot of families and children that were either are affected directly or they've witnessed the violence in Juarez. And we were getting a lot of children. Then at the same time, we were starting to get families from the military coming back from war. So even though the we weren't getting the soldiers, we were getting the families. And because the parents had PTSD, the children were also now getting traumatized by what the behavior of the military. So we were able to get a grant through Paso del Norte, and we got trained in what's called EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And Kathy Gaitan was really big on getting us trained in all sorts of modalities in trauma. So that's how I got into it. And that's when I see that there's a big need in the community. I feel that there's a lot of great counselors out there, but I think we need more training in trauma, but advanced training, not just like a day training. So that's how I got into it, and I felt like there's a need for us to collaborate and be prepared, because as we see it getting closer and closer, things that are happening, and I'm, you know, knock on wood, if it's, something ever happens here on in the borderland, like what just happened Friday in Santa Fe, I want all clinicians in El Paso, I know we're ready for first responders and police to respond to something, but clinically, I don't think we're ready. And that is ultimately my goal, that we are trained so that if something happens, we are ready to respond to those that are victims to a major event, and we can process the trauma quickly without it becoming PTSD. So that's kind of like my goal, and we're in the process of trying to form what's called the Trauma Recovery Network here in El Paso, where you would have certain therapist members and being trained in like EMDR and recent trauma event protocols or group protocols. We are able to respond, give pro bono to those victims, and within 2 to 6 sessions, process that event and it doesn't become PTSD.
It seems also, it's hard to believe that it's almost been a year also, but hurricane season is coming again. And we heard last year about the victims of Katrina and Maria and some of the other hurricanes and how tragic that is for all of a sudden you don't have a home.
Horribly.
When you talk about PTSD, and we heard a lot about it for the soldiers, but as you mentioned earlier, PTSD can affect anyone.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it could be from a newborn, from something that happened when the mother was pregnant, to anything. Trauma can be anything. It can be physical trauma. It can be a mental trauma, emotional trauma. But you were talking about Katrina, but I remember an event back in 2006 when many folks, especially down in Canutillo, lost their homes. And as the local, at the time I worked for the local mental health authority, we had to go counsel down there. But at that point, we had like no training. We can talk to them, we can hear them out and hear their how hard it is for them to have lost, you know, their home or everything that they own. But we really weren't trained as trauma therapist, and I am pleased to see that the local mental health authority now is training their therapist in things like EMDR, cognitive processing therapy, and trauma-focused therapy, therapies that are validated, evidence-based modalities to treat trauma, and not just, you know, basic listening, you know, your talk therapy. So, we don't have to go that far. Like I said, I witnessed that in 2006. It might not seem big, but for those people, it was a very big thing.
And you know, sometimes when something happens to a friend or a loved one, we go and we'll say, I'm sorry, or I know how you feel, but you don't know how they feel because you haven't been through that. And I just read a book recently about a singer and contemporary Christian singer who lost his daughter through a tragic accident. And he said the person that probably said the most that helped us was somebody who came up to us and said, I don't know what to say, but I'm here just to be with you. If you want to talk, and I'll listen.
And that's basically it, is all you can listen, because you won't know what it feels like when you lose something or you've gone through something like that. And even at that, it's not the same thing. Everybody deals with it in a very different way. So you can't say, you know, I know what it's like. No, you don't. And especially a traumatic grief, it's not something you're ever going to get over it. You're always going to grieve, and you're going to always have some of that sadness and loss. You might be able to cope with it and live with it and not be in that daily pain, but you will always have that, you know, missing that loved one. That doesn't go away.
That sense of loss.
So it's not like, get over it. There is no such thing. That's the worst thing you can tell somebody. Get over it.
And that's something that we hear or used to hear when someone was depressed. Just snap out of it. And you can't.
No. Put one foot in front of the other.
No.
So we have about a minute left. If you wouldn't mind sharing with us, Fabiola, again, the times and dates of the conference.
Yes.
And then also if there's like a web page or something that people can
go to. Definitely. Yes. It's June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. So that's this coming up Friday. We have 25 workshops or presentations, 4 plenary speakers, and 32 speakers. Great professors even at UTIP that will be presenting some of the research. A lot of local talent, but also we have speakers coming from the United States, from Juarez, from the city of Chihuahua, Mexico City, Guadalajara, just a great variety of topics. So if you want to see all the presentations and who's presenting, you can go to our website, which is www.pcp.net. There you'll have the Trauma and Resilience in the Borderland Conference page. All the information's on there, the link to register, and also you can download the program so you could see, you know, the presenters and the topics and all the information on the on their presentation. The fabulous abstracts that were submitted. It was really hard to decide who was going to present this year because we got a lot of abstract cover papers, and so we were really excited. And I hope you all come. Friday and Sunday will be for clinicians and therapists or anybody that wants to know about mental health. And then on Saturday, I hope the whole general public comes down and joins us. That one's going to be $50, and that includes your continental breakfast and your lunch. So hope you join us, and we would love to see you, and let's collaborate, network, and let's make El Paso even a healthier place to live in. So love to see you all out there.
Quisiera decir en español que van a haber traductores en español y también van a haber conferencia en español.
Muchas gracias. Thank you so much for joining us today and for educating us on some of the things that we kind of take for granted and don't know about. So we've been visiting with Fabiola Eckelberry, Kathy Giovas, and Georgina Sanchez, talking about the Professional Counselors of El Paso and their second annual Trauma and Resilience in the Borderland Conference, which will be taking place starting Friday, June 1st. If you need additional information, you can go to the website, pcp.net. Thank you all very much for being with us.
Thank you.
The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTUP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Louis Sines.